So we didn't get a customer for the longest time.
And this was obviously side hustle.
Yeah,
right?
It was like, and so it didn't like sort of.
How did you guys think it would? You thought you'd just build it and they would come?
And,
like,
and then they would come.
Hey,
and then
look, it's working. Somebody
and
found
then
us.
And thought it was really hot. You know, by then you think like, this is hot, I'm gonna nail it.
Right. How are you guys doing, Chinemaji family? It's your host, Mark Araki. Excited to bring you yet another episode of the podcast. And this week, I am super thrilled to have a female founder on the hot seat, Mrs. Pamela Morioki, who's co-founder at GiftPesa, which is a digital vouchers and gifting platform that enables employers, anybody, give gifts digitally. I'm really excited about this company, this team. And yeah, when I came across them online, I was, you know, I told my investment partner, get a hold of these people. What they're doing is super exciting. So, Ms. Pamela Morioki, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate to be here.
Fantastic. This is great. So, before we go any further, tell us, what is GiftPesa? What do you guys do? And yeah, tell us what it's about.
Sure. So GiftPesa is ideally a gift management platform. And our idea is to, you know, automate the entire process of both peer-to-peer and corporate gifting by just having a seamless sort of checkout, the process of buying, distribution, and redemption of the voucher. So ideally, that is what GiftPesa is. It's just automation of the entire gifting process.
Fantastic. And what is your role at the company?
So, okay, what's my role? I'm a co-founder, but I also lead the team as the CEO in terms of strategy and vision of the company.
That's so exciting. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Like I said, when I first came across you guys online, I was like, yeah, I need to meet you guys and kind of learn more. And the more I dug into it, the more I kind of met you and the team, I got so excited because you guys are emblematic of one of the reasons why, the primary reason why I moved back from the Bay Area, from Silicon Valley, to actually be part of enabling individuals such as yourselves, in essence, unleash Africa's potential when it comes to digital transformation and that innovation entrepreneurship opportunity. So yeah, I mean, it's super exciting to have you on the podcast
and to
know you. And we're going to dive into your background and the company and your journey and, you know, share that with everybody else who's out there who is looking to be inspired, you know?
Sure.
So let's start from the beginning. So I always like to start, you know, and kind of find out how people make the journey to become an entrepreneur, right? And, you know, what did you want to be when you grew up? Were you one of those people who used to hustle peremendas in school or sweets in class? Or what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Actually, none of this. I come from a very modest background. So my late dad was a teacher.
Okay.
So he always wanted me to be sort of a headmistress somewhere.
Go one step up.
Yeah. And then I was like, this is not my thing. But then I really wanted to do something with medicine, specifically I wanted to be a cardiologist by then. So as learning continues, you realize, hey, medicine, no. So I started to develop sort of passion into analytics and numbers. And so my dad was really strict, and strict means strict.
African dad.
Yeah,
we know them.
I was like, okay, like it was just too tough for us. So my mom was a business person, and so he was running some sort of shop. Mm. And it's still there. The boutique is still there to date.
And where is this?
So I grew up in Embu. So
okay.
Embu,
okay.
In Siakago, deep remote area, you know?
Okay.
In Embu County. And I was just telling my friend the other day, hey guys, you know, I'm part of a minority group because our tribe is like a very close-knit community, by the way.
So no way.
You're even wondering, where is even this Siakago, right?
Wait, so is it Embu or Siakago is separate?
So it's Embu County, then... Mm. The small, you know, village is Siakago.
Mm.
And so growing up in that
question, are you part of the broader Embu
group? No, I'm Mbere. No, there's another community in Siakago called Mbere.
Okay.
So you're also thinking like, okay, who is this Mberensi Akago? So that sort of background taught me to be a bit more resilient. And, you know, it's like sort of it's a hard economic area. And so it's too hot and stuff. Mm. So we were not like really agriculturists like most of the farmers would do. And so my dad being a teacher, so we tend to grow up in like a modest society. And so, and my mom was running her boutique to date. And so sometimes being the farm, the firstborn in our family. And so I was entrusted, you know, today you're the one opening the shop. And so I would see that, you know, you go sometimes you don't sell. So that's sort of resilient, you know, power to excel. I think it's shaped me to what has been really. And so I studied there in Embu, some school in Embu. But then when it came to university, so I really wanted to go to UN for whichever reason. I think it was like a prestigious university by then.
Right.
And then my, you know, the surrounding environment was like, you need to go to the university that has a fair, you know, it's the University of Nairobi. Okay. So there was also a lot of pressure to just achieve and excel.
Is it the only one with there?
I think it's the one, the university. So there was like some sort of, you know, you need to help us some sort, and you know, we need to see someone go there and be what they can be.
So, question for you, does that mentality still prevail? That mindset still prevail?
Not really. I think it's just how you view life of it. And
no, I mean, like in Siakago right now, if you were, if somebody's coming, if somebody who is, you know, in high school right now, is that mentality that they gotta go to the University of Nairobi still the dominant?
Definitely. Way of, it's still there because not most. Okay, people are starting to open up these days. But when I was studying, it was just that. So you just knew the three or four universities because, I mean, that was just it. So so I got an opportunity, then I performed, and then I went to uni for my undergraduate in Kisumu. So that was like off.
The other side of the planet.
The planet, yeah.
From a Kenyan perspective.
Yeah, so I went to Kisumu. I think that was really like a redefining moment for my family. You know, there's that even like a small, you know, sort of function to just usher you into the new world.
No way,
and
wow.
Yeah, so it was really like...
So to get to Kisumu, you had to come to Nairobi, then connect?
So we traveled like an entire day to Nairobi. And then now we were having a few of our family mates here, so they had prepared something, and then we just go to the easy coach, and that was it. So you poop to Kisumu.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that was it. So I went to do economics in Maseno. And so, man, Maseno was tough as well. It was not like UN where there are opportunities all over in Nairobi. But we sort of strive just to create our own ecosystem there and survive, so to say. And so...
So question for you on this. Like being, you know, a young girl from Siakago, you know, remote place, cutting across and all the way to Maseno, very different... In Kisumu, right? Is it, is it
in Kisumu?
Kisumu.
Yeah, not even that's... Kisumu, it's in Maseno because you have to pass Kisumu then go to Maseno.
How far is that from the city?
Like 40 minutes or 1 hour drive.
So it's out there?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're not like in the town? But,
no.
But it's a very different culture, you know.
The food is different to start with. The culture is different. And also you'll find most of the students, they are also from like the same.
The hinterland.
Yeah. So
what about the Luo culture kind of got your attention? Or what are some of the differences or some of the things that that you encountered culturally?
Okay, I would say Maseno is like it's on transit. So it was like just like a small town. And then the university was like the major attraction to most of the, you know, activities there. So if you remove the university,
it's nothing.
There's no Maseno. So it was like a more of a cosmopolitan. So you'll find like everybody, all communities there really.
Nice.
And like when you go now down to Kisumu and you're like, this is like now a culture shock.
Right, Fantastic. But I want to double click on that. So in terms of just culturally different, you know, coming from Siakago to that part of, you know, the country, what are some of the cultural differences, you know, in terms of those two groups?
Okay, for me, I'm used to, you know, like just some sort of organization, so to say. So everybody is all over scrambling for everything. You know, I come from a family of, by then we were like three. So, like, this is, like, everybody scrambling even for food in the mess, you know? So, I was like, man.
So, campus life was a bit of a shocker for
you. I don't know how I'd survive here, but after, I think we just learned to survive your own way.
Yeah, one day at a time, figure it out. Yeah. Awesome. Fantastic. So, you started econ. Is that something that you picked, or was it picked for you? Was it, like, some kind of...
So when we were choosing the courses, so I wanted to be a cardiologist, so my points didn't enable me to do.
So you were still trying to go down that medicine route.
Yeah, I think I'll. So I didn't get get the cut points to that. Then I thought, okay, maybe let me try business and economics.
Uh-huh.
Could land me somewhere. Yeah. So my dad also wanted, can you do something to do with business, because business management was like a thing then, business be admin. Mm. So my dad was like, I think it's also good for you. Mm. You can try it. Mm. So that's how I landed in amazing. Economics.
Yeah.
But I used to love to hate numbers by then. So my dad was a mathematics, physics teacher. You know, like, it doesn't work you to teach your kid, honestly.
Mm.
So you'd really be tough on me, but man, it didn't just work it out. So I just decided to do something related with business.
Mm.
So I thought economics would be great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you graduate and you kind of land in your first job at, I guess I would call it maybe, how would you describe it? You know, your first job. Tell us about that.
Okay. So actually, there was this thing of long holiday when we were schooling. So you'd close like 3-4 months.
Okay.
So I'd go get a few gigs here and there in the village. So I saw it looked like a little bit more educated then.
Right, right.
So my first job was at DHL. There was a branch at home.
Really?
And this was contracted by BAT, the BAT. So they were like their logistics partner.
Okay.
So I used to work there over holiday, and then after school I go back. So I saved quite a bit, and then I bought my first Toshiba laptop.
Congrats.
That was really like...
Was this after you had graduated?
Before I graduated. I think I was in my third second year there.
Uh-huh.
So I worked. So you were being paid, and then I saved because... I would spend at home. Literally, I didn't have like costs. So the entire few coins I got, I bought myself a laptop, and so I looked like someone then.
Going somewhere.
Yeah, going somewhere then.
I'm connected to the world.
Yeah. So then after that was like my start off to the exposure to the job and career work. Okay. So I was like a sort of a clerk. So reconciliation and everything.
Right.
Which really, like, batched well with the numbers that I was doing in school as well. And so after school, so we were doing internships. So it was a requirement for you to do internships. So this time round, I got an internship at the Treasury. The National Treasury.
Okay.
Yeah. So man, that was another
really
also
well
like
econ, right?
Yeah.
Is that how that came about? Were they looking for econ students or?
Yeah, I think they were just looking for economic students and stuff. So we just okay, let me just give it a try. Maybe I would get.
Yeah.
So it was also hard because my dad didn't want me to come here again in Nairobi. So he was a tough dad. Why will you stay? You'll be calling us for needs, you know, those kind of stuff. Because we didn't know anyone in Nairobi, Liri.
But what was the idea? You graduated, then do what?
No, I didn't graduate then. By the time I was getting an internship.
Okay. All right.
So I get an internship.
Concerned about the idea that you'd be doing an internship in the city.
In the city, yeah.
And you've always done your holiday
work at home. Yeah. And then he was like, okay, I don't even trust you big enough to just be in the city alone. Yeah.
You're too small.
Yeah. So I did my internship there, and that was it. So, and then after now, like, completing school completely, so there was this thing that Tuskies, so the late Tuskies, let me just call it the late.
Are they're not around anymore?
Man, no.
Tuskies. I always confuse them with the other one.
No, Naivas.
What's it? Naivas. Yeah. Okay.
So,
for some
reason, Tuskies had started this thing of, you know, taking interns and then sort of observing them into the job, into their various stores.
Interesting. So question, let's go back to the Treasury. This is interesting. Tell us about that. What is a Treasury? What did you do there? What are some of the things you can tell people about how the Treasury works, right? Because not many people have been access to that.
Yeah, so So I was posted to the Bima House these days with pensions and, you know, reconciliations of all that. So what would happen?
Whose pensions?
It's called the Bima House.
Bima House.
The entire Kenyan pension house.
Pension fund.
So yeah. So what they'll do is like rotate you into the entire, all the processes and departments so that you learn. You've been an all round at Bima House. So we would sometimes go to the, you know, cash office. This is how it's done. We go to the...
Did you see actual legal tender money? Did you
No, there's no money. It's legal.
Cash office.
Yeah, so like...
But there's no cash.
Like, it's not cash office. It's like, this is how we... If you want, we process your cash. This is like the process. This is how we reconcile. This is how we calculate the pension that you actually due to you. This is how they...
Do they have, like... You know, computers?
Yeah, they have like a system that like would have customers come when I was at the receptionist desk.
Oh, wow.
So customers would come.
So it's a front office in some sense.
Yeah, okay. It is. So customers would come, hey, where, how far is my pension in terms of processing and those calls, all those kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah, you'd hope that they would have some kind of digital interface now.
I think they do.
Where people don't have to come to the office to...
But you'll still, you know, it's,
people are used
it just
to.
Serves like, I mean, it's just Kenya that I want to go so I get real information.
It's here. My pension is in this building.
I think it's just like that Kenyan thing that I have to walk there and ask and, you know, that kind of relationship thing. So, yeah, people are coming from all over.
Wow, the country, yeah?
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so... So I guess it's just an office that's an admin office. There's nothing special or unique about it. Okay.
No, it's just like big files. So sometimes you'll be taking key in these files that have come from probably TSC or whichever office.
Right.
So it's like more of
administration.
Yeah.
Okay. So you end up at Tuskys. You joined their intern program, I guess.
Yes. Mm. So I was lucky to join then. And so I didn't go to the stores, like to the branches.
Mm.
So I was posted at the head office. Mm. So, and every time I pass, their head office is along Mombasa Road.
Mm.
I just feel, man, this is nostalgic. who made me who I am. So I'm always like, anyway, it's a sad story. So I was in the data analytics office by then.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing analysis of the company, giving insights and all that stuff. So, and then... Now I started shifting to supply chain. So after data, now I became a supply chain, a data administrator sort of. So at this point now, I would interact with customers, would interact with suppliers. So we would have things like, we were calling them joint business plans. So we would sit and negotiate the margins, you know, the placement at the stores and all those kind of stuff. So I'm starting to being exposed, you know, to the business aspect of, you know, different models. This is how an FMCG looks like. This is how we, you know, tackle the margins. This is how we negotiate, which was really like super important to, you know, to make me who I am.
Building
now.
A foundation.
Yeah. So it's sort of like really built into who I am today, because it's even from there that, you know, we sat and identified a problem. You know, there was a lot of manual process in terms of the vouchers that were being bought, and so we thought, why can't we like automate this? So it's from there that actually I am who I am today.
Fantastic. And you know, I was looking at that, and I was, the question I had in my mind is, you are young and you seem to be given a lot of you know, responsibility, right, and exposure. You know, what is it that they saw in you? Or was that just how they did things at Tuskys?
I don't know. I think it's just like, are you available? Just come and do this stuff.
Okay.
I think it was also, I think I really pushed hard as well. Because I also remember when I told my late dad that, you know, dad, I have a job somewhere. I've been confirmed. He was like, no. Like, he was like always protesting me to come here. And then I think he was just like a strict dad. You know, this is my girl. I want her to be like this. I want to keep watch over you. I think, and it's normal for any, like, parent, especially being a girl. So you're like, no, Stucky, I don't want the boys there to come and sort of haunt you. So and this night when I was just about to come to Nairobi, he had like totally declined.
For you to get the job?
Yeah, to come to Nairobi. So.
Oh, before you got the Tuskys gig. Okay, all right.
So I tell my mom, I just text him just before they sleep. please convince my dad that I really need to go and try this thing.
What was he? This is a bit distressing to me. What was his idea of what you would do? The boutique? What's the plan?
I think he just wanted us to be, you know, sort of around. So he would also say he would get me like a BOM job. So this is like teachers who were not like on the TSC payroll. So they would be paid by the school. I think he thought I would get that as well. Really pretty quick as well. And so for some reasons, he just said, okay, you go stay with, I so used to stay with my friend called Garo, yeah. So at least he, but what really convinced him is my friend who we used to work with at DHL in at home,
mm.
So had already been posted to Nairobi now, by this by DHL. Now, yeah.
Mm.
And so I told her, I'll go to stay with Garo. So mm. She was like, okay. It doesn't sound as bad, mm. So you just go try.
Right.
But if it doesn't suit you, well, you just come home. So and that is what that was it. So I just came here and have been here now ever since.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so you've mentioned Tuskies a few times, and clearly there's some feeling there, yeah. And the company that is no longer around. So maybe talk a little bit about that, and you know, give the audience a sense of what happened to the extent that you are familiar. Maybe tell us what the company was like, and then what happened to bring them down.
Okay, I just think is so. I left Tuskies around 2017 or thereabout. So this is just before. So the shaky bit began just before COVID. I think towards COVID 2019, and so. When Mark doesn't go shopping, you know, business is a function of
mm-hmm.
continuous cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that is cut, remember there was even shutdowns, sort of?
Right,
so
the lockdowns.
Lockdowns, yeah. So mm-hmm. they would even close earlier. So what that means to the business is you have continuous cash flow like before.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have as well obligations to meet
right.
as well. And so I think at that point it was just like, a COVID sort of thing, because traffic was no longer as we expect. So I was not there, but you know, I would just sit and see that. Even if you go to there was the Tuskies Imara just at town here. Yeah? That was like their super important branch. So the traffic reduced, the basket value reduced. You have obligations to pay. Mm. So I think they didn't meet this as quick as they could.
Yeah, so Tuskies being like a grocery store with chains across the country, how many did they have retail?
At that time, they were around 60 by then.
60.
Yeah.
60. But you know, it's interesting because even in the same time, others have thrived.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. We've had new entrants to the market and others have grown.
Sure.
And so I guess one has to wonder, was COVID kind of like... the last nail on the coffin or the straw that broke the camel's back because there were already some issues?
I think so. I think it was just like COVID like sort of ballooned it, the issues yeah. that were around it.
Yeah.
So they would stand that.
Yeah. yeah. Did you have any insight into some of the things that were...
I had already left by then.
I see. So but when you were there, you didn't see anything?
No, it was in its heydays.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It was popping, yeah?
Yeah. It was something. I think they had really given like, I think 4,000 youths chance to wow. be just there. Wow. So it was really like a household name by then.
Right, right. Yeah. Fascinating. Because we've had a couple of these, you know, established retail companies going to go down in the last decade, right?
Yeah.
Obviously with Nakumat,
yeah.
and then Tuskies followed. Maybe there's another one I'm missing here, but that's not a good pattern. That's not a good track record.
It isn't, and it's really a sad story because... If you look at what like, for instance, they two did. So, Tuskies, like, how many livelihoods were just cut by just probably a mistake that it would have been sorted or not. And so, if I sit and think about, you know, that, my heart bleeds because I have friends who are affected yeah. by that big time.
Right.
These are careers. People you've seen grown and then all of a sudden you're like, poop.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
Just like, I just hope the trend doesn't continue and just we get some sort of soberness in the retail space.
Yeah, but you know, we have, it's interesting because you have these companies like Carrefour who've come from the French company, and they look like they're doing really, really well. So, and the demand is growing, right?
Just the population they've is just growing. Just expanding. Like, I just saw they opened like another store just the other day.
I mean, it's and I remember, I don't know if it was Starsky's, but I remember there was this video that went viral of some family, of some business family. And I think it was Starsky's, I don't remember it correctly. And they were hounding
the CEO out.
Dude, that was so, what was that about?
Funny enough, we were all in the office and then we just heard noise and that was it.
So you were at the company at the time?
So I think it's also something to do with, like, sort of, like how we hand over, because this is like a homegrown business, so transmitted from
the family.
And so if you don't sit and
to professional managers, even like,
to professionalize it. So, I mean.
What was that day like? Because that is the most crazy drama.
What was this day like? So it was just like a normal day. So because the office, the entrance to the boardroom was like sort of another entryway. So we just heard noise from the boardroom. So when we checked outside, it was just like the CEO drive out. So and then now it's when the two rumors comes. Hey, this is what has happened. Like it really, it was just a normal day. But then there was something happening the other side.
And the next day?
How did so we just it? Came to work, man.
So life continues.
Yeah. So because remember when like you're like not a sort of decision maker, you really don't have like any incentive to even like don't come to work the other day because you're like, hey, I need to pay these bills, man.
Yeah, to me that's kind of like when I saw that I was like, wow, this is a bad sign. You don't see something like that just out of nowhere, right? Exactly. There's clearly a lot of problems underneath. So when Tusky eventually flipped or fell apart, to me, I connected that scene and that outcome. And I was like, there you go. I mean, it's kind of like...
Actually, it's not you. Most of the people thought that was just it as well.
It's a bad culture, right? I mean, that was just so crazy. Anyway, let's move now to more interesting things, right? GiftPesa and your journey as an entrepreneur. So you talked about how being at Tusky's exposed you to the gift voucher business and the lack of and the need for automation in that space. So, you know, and my question was going to be, what was the aha moment? But clearly, you know, maybe if you describe, you kind of already described it, but talk about like, okay, from we see this thing can be automated to we're going to do it, right? What was that decision point?
Okay, so I think for me it was just like, I just felt like I needed freedom. And so I think if I start a business, I'm going to get this sort of freedom. But man, I've not even That's got not freedom. True. Like it's even worse. So it was this one Sunday afternoon and we're like, okay, let's just maybe try. So we had a friend who does the coding bit. So we sit and ask, is this even viable to start with? And he's like, okay, I can do something. And then you can get a USSD from ATS. ATS is Africa Stocking. And see if you'll, you know, you'll try and automate the thing. But no, when we initially began, we were just trying to tap into peer-to-peer gifting. So it's Mark gifting, Palm and Palm gifting the friends.
Mm.
Man, the first blunder was just there. Because we just sat somewhere and thought, okay, Palm is going to gift the friend, but does Palm really do that? Right. No, we're not like, it's not a Kenyan culture to like sort of gift every now and then.
Yeah.
And so we didn't do like a proper market search into who will buy this voucher. And do you really buy a voucher and put it in your phone? Probabilities are not right.
Right.
You'll
right.
want
to. Because the gift is
there's that gesture of giving someone else.
Right.
And so. When we initially thought, okay, let's try and see how it goes. So I remember then we were really like, we had like a good chance because we first start with Tusky's as our merchant. And so we started by integrating to their various deals. And so this small group of people who we thought would buy the vouchers would go and check out our Tusky's.
So but let's take a step back because... You said that you saw the voucher business at Tuskies. That's where you were exposed to that whole thing. So maybe take us a little bit back there and say, this is what we saw, and we thought this could be better.
So this is what the process was, especially towards, I think, the voucher business is really big towards the end of the year. It's Christmas. It's, you know, there are a lot of festivities around the end of the year. And so a company would come deposit the funds and then would, like, they deposit 2 million, 3 million, 6 million, and then you have to print this in the denomination of 500. That's like a lot of work. And then you have to sit and pack them and organize for
this. And where was this being done?
At the branches.
Okay.
At the various
so the branches, they would print them. They had printers in the branches.
There were printers for vouchers, really. And these printers were not like 100%. So sometimes this branch will not work and you're like, let me run to Pioneer and have this printed. So we also needed to go home as well, like just other stuff. And so that's where we thought, man, it can't be
this hard.
It can't be this every time.
So part of the problem was it was making your job more hard, difficult.
So and that's how we just like sort of, let's just do this thing and see how it goes.
And who's the we in this conversation?
Me and my co-founders by then. So by then, Dan is my co-founder, was working at Tuskies by then as well. So he was in the corporate, and then me, I was in supply chain.
Okay.
So
you guys used to work closely together?
Yeah, the office is the same. So we would sort of interact every now and then. And then we're like, okay, let's give it a try so that we will be our own boss as well. And so we talked to the tech guy and he's like, okay, yeah, we can try, but we can try first by the USSD code. And then we said, okay, quote how much that would be, because we were earning by then. And so, okay, the few coins were like, okay, we can sit and negotiate with you. And so he developed the first P2P version of GiftPesa, which was like you dial the code, you buy, and you have all the functionality to redeem. So we didn't get a customer for the longest time.
And this was obviously side hustle.
It was like, and so it didn't like sort of.
How did you guys think it would? You thought you'd just build it and they would come,
and,
like,
and then they would come.
Hey,
and then
look, it's working. Somebody
and
found
then
us.
We thought it was really hot. You know, by then you think like this is hot, I'm gonna nail it.
Right.
So one day we got one customer who topped up 30K.
What? How did they find you? How did they find
you?
Did you have
like
a website?
Some sort of activation in the branches, so we would like ride on that.
Got it. So you had presence through Tuskies.
Yes.
Because you told them, hey, we got this technology. And so that's how they
found it's like limited to your stores, so you couldn't redeem elsewhere. So like the money is still in your ecosystem either way.
Right.
And so this customer, it was a lady, bought 30,000. Hey, it was like we're waiting for Jesus. Now you see, like,
coming.
Wait for. And so, but now the problem was, okay, she's already bought and then she's going to redeem. How are you going to make money from that? So
you had no business model.
Model by then. Yeah, so he topped up and then he topped up another 40,000.
You're
like,
You're
like, okay, it seems like it can work by this one customer.
Right.
How do we make money, by the way? And so now, like, we started thinking now, like, entrepreneurs. And so this customer went and bought a fridge. So we had, like, we already called her. Hey, what are you topping up? What do you want? And all those.
At least you called her.
Yeah, it's because of excitement, really.
But you know what's crazy? Like, and I think it's because you and Dan are business types, right? And so typically, if it's techies who do this, they're not going to call the person. You know, so at least you called her to find out
how did you learn about these and all that kind of stuff. And so for the longest time, I think for like 6 months or near, man, people in Kenya didn't gift through GiftPesa. And so what we did, remember, we had already sort of created relationship with like the businesses. And so we were like, do you think you can try this?
Which businesses? Outside? Other than the Tuskies,
other, like, now the corporates who are buying the vouchers.
Okay. Existing Tuskie
customers. So we were like, do you think you can try this?
Right.
And then we were like, he was like, sounds like a good idea. Let me see what you have.
Mm.
And so we went, talked, pitched. Mm. Remember, we've already like sort of created relationships. So
the conversation was a bit easier. Yeah.
Can you pay for this? She's like, hey, Apple, to pay is like, I need to confirm that. But I see it's like a good idea, but... For you to charge me extra, remember she's coming from a point of getting discounts.
Right.
So you're actually getting more than you're here telling me you're going to charge me.
Yeah.
And so for some reason, she was convinced with our Corporate Now platform. And then she did that the following month. Hey, Mark.
Uh-huh.
It was like, man, this is like a validation of our idea. And so that's
how... You made it.
Yeah. And so
how much did she... Is it the same lady for... No,
that was like a PHP. So she bought like around 1.5 million.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so I was excited. Like, man. And then he paid the platform fee. We were like...
We're inside.
Yeah. And so that's how really we got like sort of validation into it. And then, so what we did is we would like collect lots of feedback now from the corporate angle of it. So we would actually even have a feedback form after you've sort of finished disbursement. So what do you want us to improve?
Amazing.
So that kept us like improving every now and then. And then trying to, you know, understand the pain point of this customer.
Nice.
And then we're like, if you're able to pay, if you know, for convenience, then we're gonna sort you on this.
Right.
And that's how like we've grown now from 1 to 300 plus customers doing this regularly.
That's amazing. And so obviously you, when you started with the 40,000 and 30,000, then 1.5 million, it was part-time. It was on the side, right? You hadn't quit Tuskies at that point, or had you?
I quit Tuskies and went to another supply chain firm
so that I'm able
to fund this.
I see.
So remember, then now, we've already brought our other sort of co-founder, Mike.
Mm.
So Mike was in somewhere in Meru.
Uh-huh.
So, and then he had told us, so he used to school with Daniel in high school.
Okay.
And so he told us he did computer science. So we're like, someone who's done computer science can really sit and complement this well.
Right.
And so we told Mike, come over.
Mm.
You start, you know, start working on this. And then me, I'll go work and then use my card to pay the bills.
Nice.
So that was it.
Wow. Bootstrapping.
Yeah.
The real entrepreneurship. Okay, so to give us a sense from a timeline perspective, when you guys built that first USSD, what year, month, do you remember when?
Yeah, it was in 2018, towards end of 2018.
End of 2018.
Yeah, so that's when we sort of like looked the name, which name looks like sort of it would rhyme.
Mm.
And so that was then, 2018 was like really laying the foundation structures, having like a sort of...
And at that time, Dan was still at Tuskies. Had he left?
No, he had left by then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere, he was working somewhere else. And you were working at their supply chain firm.
Yeah.
And then so you, 6 months down the road, nothing's happened or the first customers happened?
No, nothing happens. Remember this 70,000 voucher lady already redeemed.
Right.
So when he redeemed, we were like, we didn't even make money from this, you know? Yeah. So
it like, works,
okay,
but
let's
this.
Just figure it out. The business amazing. Model somehow, right. somehow. Yeah. And then by then now we were starting to build up on the corporate.
Got it.
Within the 6 months, we were trying to come up with a dashboard and all that kind of stuff.
Interesting. By that time, had Mike, the computer
science
guy,
joined?
Yeah,
so we told him to come so that he would like be in charge. We thought we'd have like many customers after we finished the dashboard. So we're like, Mike, you just come over with your laptop. We cannot have like millions of people in this. So, and then we'll be getting money and then you'll have something to sort of sort the bill somehow.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. So this is 2019 now, right?
Yeah. So this is 2019. So this is 2018 now. Mm-hmm. It's like we are just into 2019. So 2019 now we started getting all small businesses, corporates, marketing agencies use our platform.
Mm.
And so we started seeing some gradual growth.
Mm.
And what we did is, okay, I just sat and said, okay, it has potential actually. And then I was, by then I was like, now almost having my second, my firstborn by then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I wanted like also some sort of, I don't want 8-5 job. Mm, so
some flexibility.
So I was also looking to also exit from these other families. So that's how I went into Gift Pesa full time.
Which, when was this? 2019. Yeah. Okay. Amazing. And so walk us through now that journey from 2019 from just a growth perspective, right? And before we go there, just maybe describe your business model and then from 2019, how things have progressed. Okay.
Mm. So what we did is we sat and thought, remember we are like helping these businesses, one, to cut off their distribution cost that they use in their vouchers, okay? So that's a cost we are saving to you because you'll have to get a rider, a G4S, to do your distribution for their vouchers. And then this HR has to ask, how many people want Naivas? You like tick. How many want people want? So we are like sorting like your headache.
Mm.
And so are you able to pay for that? And we realize most of these people are able to pay like a fee for that.
Mm.
And that's how we sort of thought, okay, let's have a platform fee for you to distribute the vouchers through our platform. And so then the corporates, so one would refer another, one would refer
word of
another.
Mouth. Yeah.
Word of mouth, yeah. Mm. So we didn't even have like funds to do marketing and stuff. So we were just like talking, like organic. calling.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's how really we've seen the growth trend.
Fantastic. And I love the business. I love what you guys are doing. I think it's one of those things I always call it the founder problem fit, founder market fit. It makes sense that you guys would be the ones doing it because, first of all, you saw it, right, firsthand.
Yeah.
And given your background and, you know, just coming up how you came up, right, with not a lot of, you know, coming up the hard way in a sense, right? And so you were toughened by that experience. Because the truth of the matter is, I guess the question there is, given the background that you came from, most people are not going to take big risky bets to leave a comfortable job and go do entrepreneurship.
No.
What convinced you to do that?
No, I think it was this first customer, really.
Okay.
Like sort of validated
the 70k person.
Doing. Yeah, so there was the 70k, then the first corporate to onboard who still is with us, really.
Okay.
And so that gave us a sense of
possibility.
This is possible.
Uh-huh.
If we perfect it, this could be something. But there are days like it was just tough, man. Like I'll just wake up and I'm like, man, is this thing even crazy. Working?
I need to call my old job back.
But at that point, at that moment, I realized it's really good to have like a super good support system that you can actually be vulnerable to.
Yeah, talk about that. What is your support system? And
yeah, so like we are friends with my co-founders. So I'll tell them, man, the energy zero levels today at zero. You pick it up, I'll come over tomorrow.
Wow.
And so that sort of gave like sort of comfort.
Yeah.
Sort of. Because we would share like everything really, because I'll tell, have you even paid your rent today? Take this small cash pay, you know,
right.
That kind of ecosystem where you're friends,
right?
And then you can be vulnerable to one another because
right.
It's not a must I'm be vulnerable to my friend, but if I can share like what I'm going through, it makes me even productive when
of course.
I come back,
yeah.
And so I realize it's super, super important.
That's amazing.
Like, I was even going crazy. Now, here are kids. Here is Gift Pesa. Here is... I mean, I was all over the place. But that sort of gave me sanity to know that if Mike and Dan is there, like,
we're good.
It's gonna be...
You know what? I got to tell you this. You see, one of the things I have kind of, in a sense, come to accept, we live in a very... What's the word I want to say? We live in a very... our society is kind of broken in some ways, right? Because I call it the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, right? Mm-hmm. This is kind of like schizophrenic, right? People can be really friendly and nice and warm, but once business and money and stuff like that gets into the mix, people go crazy,
They do.
And I've just seen that dichotomy in our society and the trust. We live in a low trust society. Everybody's trying to eat what they kill. Mm. Like, you know, just this quarter, you know, somebody who was at one of our companies siphoned some money out of it, and somebody who we had given an important role and so on and so forth, we had trusted them. You know what I'm saying? And so to me, that's become the norm. Like you work with a vendor and they promise this and high, and they give you like, it's as if the margin is the lie. Their business model is, I'm going to promise you this and say, give you this.
Zero.
It's so freaking crazy. And so every time I meet people, I'm always like, waiting to see that show up. Because that's kind of bit now is my expectation, you know?
Yeah.
It's rare to find people who roll like how you guys roll. And so the more I've gotten to know you guys and see how you're just authentic and real. And I pray and I hope that stays for this lifetime. Because honestly, there is nothing more precious than that. Like real friendships, people you can count on, they can count on you. What they say, their word is born. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, our society is broken that way. And it's sad because it costs so much. It kills so much opportunity and potential.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
So, I think for me, it's really important because we've seen, like, especially if you sit and, you know, start doing entrepreneurship. And then the good thing or the bad thing is we were not making money. So that we were all in like a problem cocoon. So there was no even chance of thinking that I would not trust Pam, because when she goes there, she'll come back with something that will sort of benefit all of us.
Right.
So when Mike goes, you're like sort of, okay, this is what I had, guys. Can we sort and discuss? And so I really... The society is just broken, as you've said. We've seen a lot of untrust going on. And that brings about, you don't believe in other person's capability. You don't trust in other people's, you know, what they can do for you.
Right.
And I've learned just to let them be the best they can be. And through that, we are pulling to the same, like, you know, end goal.
Right.
So if Mike is very good in, you know, retention, Dan is very good in sales and convincing. If we get a customer, it's benefits. For all our benefit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so because we are pulling towards one goal, we sort of find a point of convergence.
Right.
And then there's, I think if you make a lot of money, it's just like everyone feels important than the other.
Right.
And that didn't happen for us because we've been, we've bootstrapped for the longest, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and long may this continue, Pam. I mean, I'm a huge fan of you guys and the way you have brought it together in a very organic, natural, kind of authentic way, right?
But it has been tough.
Of course, it's been tough, right?
Like, you see, deciding to, you know, get revenues from customers B2B, it's
not easy.
You can be, because the closure takes like 6-3 months just to close one customer.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you feel like, is this thing gonna even work at some point?
Right.
But you just find like you're convinced that you are really doing the right thing, because we find people like Mark, other people who like, hey, you guys, I think you're doing something great. Just sit and perfect this.
Mm.
We get some sort of validation in the entire thing.
Right. I mean, look, fantastic. So let's move on to now, like, because we've talked about how you guys have grown and you've gone from now 1.5 million Kenya shillings, 70,000, 1. Whatever million it was, your first big customer. What was your, I don't know, you don't have to share if you don't feel like, you know, you want to, but maybe you can give us a range of last year's business.
Yeah, so like last year we sold like, close to 300 million in terms of GMV.
300 million.
Yeah.
Kenya shillings. Awesome.
Yeah. So, but if you think of from 1.5 to 300, it's been sheer sacrifice, really. But yeah.
You've earned every single penny.
Yeah. So, and we hope to do at least 0.5 this 500 million this year, and so, yeah.
Fantastic. Really? And what's the size of the team today?
So we began with me and Dan and then Mike. So today we have a team of 12.
12. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah, very, very exciting. So, look, I mean, how have you evolved as a person and as a leader since the beginning of this?
So, sometimes when I look at myself, I'm like, how did you even manage? You know, there's sometimes like you go to a client and you're like, oh man, I don't want to talk to this client because it's a tough one, you know. And you're like, you're feeling like you're a bit small to them to right. convince them.
Right.
But I think it's just the confidence and the value that you talk to them. So I've seen that evolve over time in me that I don't sit so and focus into, you know, they are multinationals, they are all this kind of stuff. I have value,
mm-hmm.
and I'm solving your problem.
I'm about
so
to talk to you about it.
So you need me.
Yes.
You need me to you know, to sort your problem.
So initially you'd be a little bit hesitant. Yeah, I'm not big enough for this.
Yeah.
But now you're like, you know.
Will they even agree to it? Will they agree to pay, you know?
Right.
And so, but of late I'm like, I'm selling to your value. Look
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
If you're on board to us, I'm going to give you 1,000+ merchants where you can spend. I'm going to give you a dashboard for, you know, visibility.
Right.
I'm going to give you 1 year validity.
Right.
And so when you continuously sell these values, you even sort of, you grow because you realize it's not how small or how big, it's what
the
problem
value.
Are you solving? What value are you giving me actually?
Fantastic. So at the end of the day, it's what it comes down to. It's not about the big company.
Yeah, no, it's like, are you able to solve? I have a problem. Are
you
able to
solve
my problem?
Fantastic.
In the most efficient way.
So how do you quantify that? Is it that confidence has grown, self-belief?
Yeah, I think what happened is when I fully transitioned into GiftPesa, I immersed myself into, you know, I started hanging out with people who are like starting up as well. So I attended iHub cohorts. I would go to various events like sort of like-minded people. So I would learn how to pitch, how do you talk to your customer, what do you, the fundamentals of a business. And that has really worked for me. Because if I look at my friends, I have you either in business or doing something that is similar, we are like-minded.
Right.
And so what that has done is like, it's really giving me confidence that, this is really doing great. You can also do great. Why not?
Right. Fantastic. I love it. And, you know, that's awesome. So do you think, you know, being a female entrepreneur, co-founder,
did you
CEO,
ask that, Mark?
I've got to ask. So do you think there are any unique challenges that, or is that?
No, I think there are unique challenges really because when we sit on the table is, whether you're female or male, it's just what are you bringing to the table? What value are you bringing? But there's this perception of, you know, ladies or women, you need to be sort of vulnerable sort of thing. But we're all the same. I mean, business is sort my problem, I pay you.
Subjective.
That's it.
Yeah, it's not subjective.
And so,
yeah,
we've seen a lot of women funding come up. We've seen a lot of, you know, empowerment in women. But at the end of the day is, Do you have a solid business?
Yeah.
Are you able to convince? How many customers are you able to acquire? You know, how are you able to grow your business? At this point, it doesn't matter
your gender. Yeah. But do you think? Yeah, go ahead.
But now there's this other social aspect of, you know, like being a young mom. You can't compare me with you because I have like sort of increased responsibilities.
Right.
I have like people who are looking. I'm not saying you're not being looked at, but there's like, I have a whole toddler looking for me. Now there are two. And so balancing that is also not as easy.
Right.
And so what I've realized is just live at the moment.
Okay.
So do what you can for the best of all.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I even don't remember me going for maternity leave. Mark, I was just like, GiftPesa is all over the place. And so, okay, I would say that's like a female problem, but really is...
Right.
At the end of it is
it's life.
What value are you bringing in?
Yeah, amazing. That's a fantastic mindset, right? That's a fantastic mindset. So biggest challenges you've experienced, like maybe top two challenges you've experienced since
I think for one is like really trying to figure out your product market fit, because it's if we had hacked that from probably 2018, it would have been better now. But I think it's just entrepreneurship. Man, you can't just figure out it the first day. So you have to like sort of grow with the curve, and as you grow is when you learn how to sit and perfect that. So sitting and getting like a product market fit and where is this value, where is the customer moving to, is super important.
Right.
You realize when you present your idea, which is the aha moment for the customer.
Yeah.
You need to spot that.
Yes. Like, when do the eyes light up, right?
So you're like, can I see that slide one more time? So you need to sit and figure out what that slide is actually is. Because that slide is what is going to give your business. Because that's what they're able to pay for.
Right.
And that's your business. Really. Right. Business is what you can pay for.
Right.
And so trying just to create values around it and where is the sweet spot is not easy. It's a journey. But if you figure it out, that's just...
So that's a question of just being very attentive.
Yeah,
very making no assumptions.
And then talking to the customers. You don't sit and assume like the way we assumed. People gonna buy vouchers. People don't buy vouchers.
Right.
They wait to be gifted.
Right. Yeah. So who's the buyer?
Why would they buy? Who is able to pay? Why are they buying? When do they buy? How do they buy them? You know, where are they coming from?
Right. Yeah. Right. That customer journey, right? That's fantastic. So lessons learned, right? Just generally, right? What are some of the top two lessons learned?
I think if you want to come to entrepreneurship, it's a fantastic journey. It's really fulfilling when you're working towards a product that you've seen from zero to, you know, grow gradually. It's really fulfilling. So I would say work to your passion, man. Just follow what you, like, really love to do, because... Thinking of your business 6 years, 7 years is not the easiest, but you just need, why did I even start? You know, that passion, that figure that keeps you going is what will, like, sustain you.
And what's that for you?
For me, it's like, you know, it's even biblical that we should be grateful. So that act of being, of gratitude, thanksgiving, you know, it's really, like, keeps me like, hey, I've managed to help these companies, appreciate their employees, their 1,100 employees, is really like, man, wow.
Awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. So what would you do differently, looking back?
What would I do different? Like, I would like, when I would start another company today, I would start by the customer. I would ask the customer questions. Do you think you have a problem in this? I would not sit in somewhere in my room and create a solution. I would just do a lot of survey, a lot of feedbacks, a lot of, you know, questionnaires, just to understand what are you solving for? What's your problem? Because that's when you nail that, that's where you're going to succeed into it.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's a different perspective, you know, that has been... assigned to Steve Jobs' viewpoint on that, like, if he asked customers don't know what they want. You got creative and give
know,
it to them.
They know what they want. They'll tell you, this is how much I pay for this. This is how I want it done. This is what, you know, this is what I need from it.
Check this out. When they released the iPhone, when Steve Jobs released the iPhone, it was the most expensive phone, okay? It had no buttons. It was the first clear, you know, And some of those things, and they went with that. For of course, people had phones to begin with, so at least there was that. But this type of phone at this price, you know, so there's something to be said also about, I don't know, like intuition, but balancing that also with what you're saying. I mean, two things can be true at the same time. It's knowing when to follow which that makes a difference.
But exactly, it's, you know, like, where is the sweet spot with this?
Right.
And I totally agree with you. You might go that route for Steve Jobs, but this other route as well is super important.
Super important.
You need to sort of get a balance.
Yeah, and who knows what exactly they arrived at that intuition, but intuition is also important. Both of those two things are super important.
Yeah.
You gotta have an intuition, and then you gotta know how to test the intuition, right? While holding that belief real and tweaking it based on the feedback you're getting, right? So, fantastic. So, what is Gift Pesa's potential? Where are you guys taking this thing?
Look, currently, we are leveraging on the mobile money.
Right.
So, like, say if we were to go in Ghana, we'd sit and integrate with the mobile operators there. That's not, like, scalable. So we are looking to be a borderless solution in terms of wherever you are, you're able to gift and spend your voucher. And so what our vision or, you know, our end goal is, like, how can we create a borderless gifting solution? And that's why what we are working towards, really. We haven't, like, sat and conquered, you know, even just Kenya first.
Right.
But it's, we are continuously improving that and seeing how can we now have more channels to sort of facilitate that. How can we have more partners to sort of facilitate us being a borderless solution?
Very exciting. So Africa-wide is possible,
yeah.
Essentially. Right? But even winning Kenya is kind of goal number one. But
yeah.
Awesome. So parting shot or advice to fellow entrepreneurs, what's one piece of advice you would?
I think let's keep going. The journey is just better ahead. Let's just keep going.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. As we wrap up here, a couple of questions for you. So first is, what is the most influential book you have read?
The 1 Minute Entrepreneur.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you'd recommend people read that.
Yeah.
Do you remember what was the main takeaway from that?
No, I think it really explains, like, it really talks to the business aspect of it. And he was saying, like, what I was just saying, man, customers will tell you everything you need to do. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so rapid fire round. I'll say a word and you respond with the first thing that comes to mind, right? So, you ready?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So, Africa.
Great.
Entrepreneurship.
Fantastic.
2030.
Better.
Fantastic. Well, Pamela, it's been fantastic to have you on the Chinyamaji podcast. And I'm really excited about you and your team and what you guys are doing. And just, like I said, emblematic of Africa's potential in this digital transformation and this brave new world that we are in. So thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. I'm always happy to be here. I think it's just some sort of breeze. Every time I come here, I'm like, wow. And then the environment sort is like a tech environment sort of. So you'll find young guys. So it's really amazing as well.
Yeah, that's what we try to do with the Launchpad. And, you know, this is like a second home for you. You're always welcome here. So if you're having a day where you feel like, man, I need to get away from GIFS offices and go somewhere where you have some friends, Launchpad is wide open for you.
Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate it. Man, we've just come here and we were like, so we like sitting at the garden there. We're like, wow. So the breeze, and then we're like, this is really amazing. Yeah.
Well, awesome. All right, Chinyamaji family, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I did. And until next time, see ya.